When Bernard Madoff's $65 billion Ponzi scheme came to light in 2008, it rocked the financial world, and it was devastating to his family, who claimed to know nothing about what he'd been doing. A new HBO movie called Wizard of Lies premiered last Saturday. It's based on the Diana Henriques book about the case and focuses on the human toll his crimes exacted. Robert De Niro and Michelle Pfeiffer star in it, and I'm very pleased to welcome its director, Oscar winner Barry Levinson, back to our show. Good to see you again.
Good to see you.
You've done a lot of work in television, but when you were making feature films like Diner, The Natural, Good Morning Vietnam, Rain Man, Bugsy, Wag the Dog, did you consider TV a less serious medium?
No. In fact, after winning Academy Award for Rain Man, I did Homicide as a TV series for NBC.
And that was kind of a breakthrough series. So, TV changing? Were they taking more chances?
I mean, they do. I mean, the networks do periodically. But I think what you're seeing now is a huge change, you know, with all of these other outlets.
And some critics are claiming that today's TV, especially on the premium networks like HBO and Netflix, is where the most innovative filmmaking is being done. So how different is it than working through the studio system? Although you never really worked in the studio system.
No, not really. But the change is that, in a sense, what's happening in, let's say, television, which is streaming video and HBO and on all these other subscription services, is that they're doing a lot of pieces, you know, based on people. And feature films are basically, you know, cartoons, and in the sense of, you know, superheroes and all of that kind of high action, high energy.
Well,
work.
That's where they've gone, right?
Yeah.
So is that why now you can have some really big movie stars in a TV movie? Over here you have four or five of the top actors in film.
Well, I mean, I think that's because of if you really want to get into some meaty roles, then you're going to end up, you know, coming to television.
The Bernie Madoff case has been extensively studied and written about, and there was an ABC movie about it a year ago. Why did you feel there was still stuff to talk about in a feature film?
I think, yes, the focus of our film is the family.
Mm-hmm. And family dynamics.
And how that functions, and then we move out from that. So, in other words, if he can ultimately, you know, lie to his family, that kind of sleight of hand that he was using, then you get a sense of how he could function. You know, Bernie Madoff was not this kind of flamboyant character. He was very quiet, very understated, and he manipulated people. He manipulated his family, and then he manipulated all of these people who invested.
Although, at the time, most people felt that the family couldn't have been totally oblivious to what was going
on.
Right,
right.
You suggest that they probably were unaware because he was so able to compartmentalize.
Yeah, and the fact that he set it up in a way that the boys didn't know. And I think, you know, for Ruth, you know, what he told her is what she believed. See, most people don't realize it wasn't, you know, Ruth knew him from the age of 13. It was the only man she ever had in her life. You know, they married, you know, very young. And so she never was out in the world, in a sense. So that man was everything. And I think that had a huge effect on how she viewed how he functioned in business.
And you also, the film suggests that he kind of bullied his sons. So
yes.
They went along as well.
Yes.
There's a really shocking scene where he forces one of his sons to eat lobster, even though the kid says he doesn't like lobster.
Actually takes the plate away from him and said, here, have the steak, you know. You're just showing in certain ways, more subtle ways, other ways that he functioned and dealt with his boys, what he wouldn't tell them. And even when they began to ask questions, and he would always sort of, you know, change the subject, move away from it and say, look, you have your business. You function on that part. I have this over here. And they bought into that. They grew up in that kind of the misleading and misconceptions of father to sons.
Although they were still in the same basic office, but on a different floor.
Different floors and high security to go to the other floor.
The writer of the book, Diana Henriquez, actually appears in the film, A Matter of Typecasting. She's playing herself?
Yeah, well, it came up in discussions. What about if she plays herself? She is the person who interviewed him in prison.
The first journalist to be granted interviews? Why did he even talk to her?
I think Diana said because she had interviewed him before for different things over the years, just, you know, financial things. She would call him on the phone, ask him questions. So they knew each other a little bit. So I think he felt maybe perhaps, and I'm just guessing, more comfortable in the fact that not a total stranger is now coming to the prison. And over a 2-day period, she asked him these questions, which is, you know, part of the book. And we thought, well, look, if she can be comfortable with Bob in those sequences, it might give an authenticity to it. And so she came in and she actually read, playing herself.
And I suspect also told De Niro, this is the way Bernie talks, or this is the way he would have responded?
No, not really. You know, there wasn't, I'm sure there's going to be, you know, little conversations about it. I said to her after a couple takes when we began to do it, I said, I'm curious, so how close is Bob to Bernie in these interviews? And she said, there are moments that the way he responds is so close to Bernie, it gave me goosebumps.
Robert De Niro is no stranger to playing unsympathetic characters, Travis Bickle, Vito Corleone. Was he attached to this project from the start?
He, his company optioned it, I think, back in 2012.
And he looks a lot like Madoff in the film. Was there a fair amount of makeup involved?
They did a little work on his nose, and then he shaved the top of his head to be thin in the same way that Bernie's hair would have been.
But he never met Bernie, I suspect.
No.
In his scenes with Michelle Pfeiffer, as you said, plays his wife, Ruthie. Had she and De Niro ever worked together before?
They worked together in a film. I can't remember the name offhand. But they did about 4 or 5 years ago. They worked together.
Was she able to meet Ruth?
She did. Yeah. She went up and spoke to her for a few hours.
I'm speaking to Barry Levinson, who has directed an HBO film called Wizard of Lies that premiered last Saturday.
Yes.
By the way, the book that it's based on, The Wizard of Lies by Diana B. Henriquez, has just been reissued in a paperback version.
Yes.
Is the film pretty faithful to the book?
It is in a lot of the details, especially in a lot of the financial things, and of course the interviews that Diana had. We tried to stay as close to the authenticity of it as possible.
Have you heard from Ruth, who now lives in Connecticut?
No.
Has she seen it?
No, I don't know. I mean, I it's hard to say if, you know, any of the family members that are still around saw it. I don't think we've heard from anyone.
Well, neither of the sons are alive.
Right.
Alessandro Nivola and Nathan Darrow play his sons, Mark and Andrew, and they're a major part of the story that you tell.
Yes.
Did you see the real beginning of the story as the moment when they learn that their father has been engaged in fraudulent activity?
Well, I think, you know, you always have to figure, how do you want to address a piece where some people say, well, I know the story. And so the story is not simply when he tells the family. You know, it's the beginning. Because that moment of suddenly a family being turned upside down is the beginning. And now we're gonna play this out, as opposed to spend an hour developing, and then he says, by the way, I have a Ponzi scheme going. So structurally, we began with that event, and then we play it from that point.
I had dinner with a Nobel Prize-winning economist recently, and I had seen the film and was thinking about it, and I said, why would anybody do this? They must know that sooner or later it's going to come falling down on their head. And he said, no, part of human psychology is that they believe that they're the one who's going to be able to keep it going and pull it off.
True. Look, and the reality is, if not for the crash of 08, his Ponzi scheme could have continued on.
For a while. Well, eventually.
Eventually it's going to collapse, but he was brought down by the whole stock market crash.
One of the most colorful characters in the film is Madoff's right-hand man, Frank DePasquale, played by Hank Azaria. Was he really the only person who knew everything that was going on?
Well, it appears as if this was a very, very small group that really understood what went on. Even his brother, Peter, didn't quite understand what was taking place. And he went to jail. We focused on what we know, and Frank obviously knew a lot, and there were a few other people in the office on the 17th floor that were also, found guilty. But he did contain.
Are they all in jail?
They did go to jail. Hmm. I can't remember the number offhand right now, but some of them did go to jail.
Now, both of his sons, as I said, have died since the case broke. Mark committed suicide in 2010, and Andrew died of cancer in 2014. Did Ruth blame Bernie for their deaths?
Well, I mean, I obviously.
By the way, Frank also.
He died of cancer. He died of cancer before he would have gone to prison. Yeah. It's hard to say specifically, but I mean, when one of the sons commits suicide 2 years to the day of the scandal breaking, you have to look to Bernie as being responsible for it. And I'm sure that that was the position that Ruth would have taken.
You recreated the Madoffs' New York apartment and their Montauk house for the film. Did you have photographs to work from?
Yeah, we had, very authentic. Yeah, we tried to be as close to what we could, get as possible. So there was two stories, to the penthouse, and so we tried to do those things. And, in that case, you want to be as close to it as you can possibly do it,
Hey, you've worn many hats over the years. You've directed, you've written. You've produced, and you've also acted.
On occasion.
On occasion, well, but you've done them all. Do you decide what kind of project you want to get involved with next, according to where the itch is at the moment?
Certain things present themselves. You go, I'd like to do that. Things that you might not even expect. I think in terms of my career, some directors, some writer-directors stay in a particular zone because that's where their interest is. I've been sort of all over the place. So, in other words, if I'm doing Wag the Dog, a political, absurdist piece, that's on one side. And if I did, Diner, that's on a totally different level. So I jump around because my interest is sort of, more varied.
And there have been comedies and there have been serious films.
Yeah.
So there's no thread that ties them all together other than what grabs your attention?
Well, maybe there is, but I never stop to think about it because what's the point? It's like what gets your attention, whether it be comedy or drama, you just go in that direction.
There's a dream sequence in the film in which Bernie wanders through the apartment after he and Ruth take a bunch of Ambien in an unsuccessful suicide attempt. Was that based on anything?
Well, they did take the Ambien and supposedly we're going to commit suicide, but you can't commit suicide from Ambien. And what it does is you can go into all kinds of hallucinations. And we were thinking, well, if he were hallucinating, what would he be hallucinating about? And maybe that would be the only time that we would see his sense of guilt in some subconscious form. As odd as it might be and as it was portrayed. And but that event, that the idea they took Ambien, supposedly to kill themselves, is true.
Do you still have a connection to Baltimore, which was a setting for many of your early films?
Well, I do. I get back there infrequently. I was just there for the Maryland Film Festival, and we showed Wizard of Lies there because they were opening a new theater that would be their center. And so that was the first film to be shown in the new theater complex that they've constructed.
Well, Baltimore has been an inspiration for a number of filmmakers, probably disproportionate considering the size of the city. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I mean, if you take John Waters, we always said we were five exits away from one another.
And then you have The Wire, for example.
And and David, who was in Baltimore and wrote for the Sun paper and then wrote the book Homicide and then did Wire. So I'm not exactly sure, but it was a thriving little, film community, which has now kind of come to an end because there's no tax rebates and no support for the film community. So they've nearly wiped out the film community in Baltimore.
Now the hot cities are Atlanta, Brooklyn,
Georgia, and New York.
Mm-hmm.
New York is to find stage space is incredibly difficult. The crews are just constantly working, and it's making a lot of money for the state.
Why doesn't everybody do it?
Well, because what happens is, you have to have a certain amount of leadership. And some places will say, we're putting out $200 million, like money going out, and not saying, how much money is coming in? Because I had this discussion in Maryland. And saying, have you checked in terms of how much lumber was used? How many rent-a-cars, gasoline, all of those things?
How many meals were eaten in restaurants?
Restaurants, hotels, and all of that. And they don't really compute it that way. And the other part of it is, like in Maryland, they built a real community of filmmakers and those working on films and a very diversified group as well. And that was literally just wiped out.
Barry Levinson's film, Wizard of Lies, stars Robert De Niro, Michelle Pfeiffer, and Alessandro Nivola. You can find it on HBO. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Oh, pleasure.